Hi everyone, I'm Kate and this is Carla, your trends expert at Box Clever. Welcome to our new Soapbox podcast series revisiting our cost of living trends report.
So the trend we're looking at today is called value complexity, and this trend speaks to the shifting perceptions of value that are being impacted in this cost of living crisis.
So today we're joined by Rich and Tom, who are both research directors at Box Clever. So hi both, thank you for joining us today on this podcast episode. So we would like to ask you the first question, which is, how have you seen this trend of value complexity playing out in the real world?
Well, I think the first thing that we should say is that consumers looking for value is nothing new. But as you quite rightly highlighted in the trends report, there's an increasingly sharp focus on value today because of austerity. The cost of living crisis is absolutely squeezing an awful lot of people, more and more people, and squeezing them over the long term. So we are seeing value just being just so important to so many people. And I think when we used to work with our clients and we would do segmentation and we would do typologies, there'd always be someone called, like, you know, the savvy seekers or something like that, or the value seekers. But I think that segment, it will still exist, but it'll just be bigger and bigger now. So it is absolutely something worth talking about.
It was very noticeable to me that the like prime time schedule on like mainstream TV is actually dominated by value-oriented TV programs. So like you used to kind of anticipate those shows would be buried in a daytime TV schedule, but now like 8 o'clock at night, ITV, it's Martin Lewis doing his like broadcast to the nation. He's obviously got this like saintly aura about him. I find him quite an interesting character, should we say, but like people trust him implicitly. You go to focus groups talking about how you get value in, say, telco sector, his name will come up as being like the authority, the only person people trust. I think it's really like striking that that is now like mainstream entertainment. And another kind of, our focus was obviously looking at loyalty schemes, and there were shows in the like primetime schedule going up against the latest BBC drama, but about like loyalty programs and are they a con? And that kind of mindset of gotta get this right, I can't waste my money, is so prominent that it's now like a concern for people to watch at home when they're chilling out, you know, after a hard day's work.
Yeah. That's really interesting about Martin Lewis as well, because I think he went on the National Television Awards, NTAs is it, saying that he doesn't actually have any competition. So it's just him basically doing all the heavy lifting around like consumer journalism. And he thinks that there needs to be more people. He basically was calling for more people to like compete with him. And he was also, I think, calling out, is it BBC who like, was it Panorama or Watchdog or one of them, where they stopped that program. He was saying, actually, that's really important for consumers now, day to day, and like the situations that they're in. And obviously we know there's a squeezed middle. So even more like has more broad appeal now as well. But I thought that was really interesting about Martin Lewis, because he is, yeah, like held in such high esteem, but he doesn't really have any other like people like him. There's no other Martin Lewis's really, is there?
No. And if you wanted to compete against him, where would you start? Because he's now primetime TV.
It's really interesting. It seems to be this thread that has run through all our episodes, which is that consumers are just really on high alert when it comes to spending their money, and they want to be savvy and they want to understand, you know, exactly where they're putting their money and where they're getting the value from it.
Yeah. And what is savvy? What does it really mean? And I think that brands need to be aware that increasingly consumers are looking for what they call value for money, what they call good value. And what does that really mean? It means not necessarily the lowest price, but it means a fair price for good quality, or at least good enough quality. And there are a few brands that are really doing a good job of hitting that target.
I think the other thing that plays out in that, though, is like choice as well. Mm. Like people don't want to feel like they're not able to pick and choose a product that they particularly like or they think is desirable. So in addition to offering people like cheap at good enough quality, they also have to feel empowered to choose between different things. like having a range of options is actually really key. And I think is why there's maybe a bit of a pivot away from some of the pure value players to something a bit different that's happening at the moment. So that kind of, we talk about Audification, right? And how Audi have raised the floor, but they now have a challenge in that people are wanting choice on top of what they offer as well. Is that fair to say, do you think, Rich?
I think it is true, absolutely. I think that Audi have changed the game, but we're going back quite a number of years now. They've done so much to shift the way people feel about prices and feel about value and certain kind of tactics that retailers can use within that space. And I can't believe it took us so long talking about value to mention Audi, because a bit like Martin Lewis, Audi will get talked about in almost every focus group, whether you want to or not. And I think that what they managed to do and maintain it successfully over the years was exactly what I just said, which was give people good enough quality for a fair price, a low price. I think they've done really well. I think sometimes people overestimate the savings that they're making at Audi, but I think that their success is built on the fact that they were offering, you know, cheaper baskets for comparable products. Mm.
And it's really interesting just how important quality is. And I think when we talked about this in the report, but when you look back to the last sort of economic crisis, which was in 2008, 2009, that's when you had sort of Poundland emerging, Primark was really big now, and those players that were sort of really just about value. But now consumers are wanting still value, but quality alongside it, and that's really important.
100%. We're referencing that dictum earlier of buy cheap, you buy twice. And actually, that feels like it's shifted away now, that you can buy cheap and still get like pretty reasonable quality that will endure. And again, that's kind of linked to Audi raising the floor.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but you think about like the classic Norpak or Racer bar, they are not the brand that they are quite clearly pretending to be, but they are plenty good enough and they cost so much less. And I think one of the key things that Audi has done is kind of change the way that we feel about good value and about low prices. It isn't, and it hasn't been for a long time, but it isn't embarrassing now to say that you bought a dupe or that you bought something and it didn't cost you very much. Actually, something to be kind of proud of, to even kind of, you know, brag about. But that never used to be the case. And I think, coming back to quality and dupes, I definitely want to talk to you about dupes.
Please do, because we've talked about dupes in a few other episodes as well, haven't we? And just how much, obviously, we see that playing out on social media, like TikTok, for example, just the amount of hits that the word dupes get. So yeah, tell us a little bit more about that, please.
Well, they're kind of everywhere now, aren't they? Like, it did used to be kind of Audi dupes and how cheeky they were and what they were getting away with. But I did some groups for a homeware brand last week, and people were talking about like white company dupes, but talking really positively and about how you could get those, and they're basically the same, but they're a lot cheaper.
Yeah, I think that is definitely the rise of dupes is definitely reflective of this particular trend, and just other things that we've seen around like de-influencing as well, as a bit of a crossover, another episode that we talk about. And yeah, like you said, it's become a bit of a badge of honour now, isn't it?
We've come a long way. I mean, when I got a knockoff shell suit from Great Yarmouth Market, that wasn't cool, would you believe? And a far cry from the legit Puma shell suit my mum did buy me for the year 6 school trip to Bognor Regis Butlins. But now, I don't know if you'd be able to tell the difference, and I don't know if anyone would care. And I think that's really positive for, well, legally, it might be a bit of a challenge, but what Aldi's doing isn't illegal. I know they've been challenged a couple of times and they sail pretty close to the wind, but the fact that you can get something that is just as good or good enough for a far cheaper price is great for us.
Yeah, we see that a lot in beauty, don't we, as well?
Yeah.
A lot of kind of, this has been made in the same factory as a big like mainstream expensive premium brand, and it's like, yeah, half the price, but I guess it comes down to, it has the same effect and the same level of quality. And there's just a huge, massive conversation around that at the moment.
and kind of comes back to that savviness, like everyone wanting that insider intel, like actually I got this and it's really good, and I know that, but that is a problem for brand loyalty.
So another brand we wanted to talk about and that we talked about in the cost of living report was M&S, and how obviously we've talked a lot about Aldi, and we know that it's not about the cheapest price when it comes to this trend, but I think we've been tracking M&S and how they kind of doing really well as a brand. Obviously they bring quality, and you know, while it's not the most affordable quality, it's something that people kind of trust, that they can kind of get something that is, you know, is going to have, you know, like for example, dine-in meals. We've seen how well that they've been doing because they have quality ingredients, and people are willing to kind of pay more for that, potentially trading down from takeaways or restaurant meals. So I don't know if you had any thoughts on M&S as a brand and what they're doing.
Well, they were talked about extensively last week in the focus groups that I did, and very positively as well, because they're out there talking about their quality and maybe aren't afraid of saying, almost like that Stella Artois advert, you know, from years ago, reassuringly expensive. They're almost playing in that space at times. But it's clear that people do believe in that quality and can feel that quality. And perhaps the prices actually aren't that expensive either. Certainly, we talk about doing a dine-in, trading down from like a Domino's or something like that. You are saving a huge amount of money, but are you really losing out in terms of pleasure, experience? Probably not.
I think one of the things M&S do well is the emphasis they put on like durability, that side of quality, like as a parent buying like kids' clothes, they usually have in the label of like their coats and things, you know, hand this down to someone else, etc. And their clothes are designed to last. So even though you may pay a slight, it's not even that much for a premium. Obviously, it's not like Primark price, but it's not that expensive. But you know, it's going to endure, and it's not just going to absolutely disintegrate when you put it through the washing machine. So I think that they're a brand that you can properly depend on and feel good about buying.
Yeah.
A fair price, the right price for good enough quality, doesn't it? That's what it's all about.
Yeah, they did. I think they've had a lot of almost like organic PR as well on social media, of people talking about doing a basket shop at M&S or a trolley shop at M&S, and just actually how affordable it can be. So I think that's helped as well in sort of boosting their perceptions that actually it's not, you know, eye-wateringly expensive. You can get quite a decent amount of items there and not sort of break the bank.
So I think a contrast to them would probably be John Lewis, who I don't know if they've necessarily navigated these choppy waters to quite the same degree. I think M&S have done quite a good job of balancing that accessible price point without going for like lowest, but whilst maintaining a level of quality that justifies the slight premium that they're looking for people to pay. And again, having, I keep bang on about it, but there's good choice there. You can get a range of different things. They've got lots of different ranges to choose from. I sound like I'm a big M&S shopper. I'm really not, but respect what they've done and the way they've navigated what's been a rough time.
Another brand that's done really well at the other end of the spectrum, arguably, in terms of really thinking about what value means to consumers and how to kind of keep pace with what value means, is Greggs. Because they arguably at one time were kind of more in the cheap and nasty kind of arena, like really, really low prices, but they were a bit of a laughing stock, weren't they? And you hear this in focus groups, but you can see it in your own life as well, I'm sure. They've upped their game. They've done a slight rebrand. It's kind of a sharper kind of, still true to what Greggs is, but it feels contemporary.
Exposed brick walls, yeah, black and white photography. Like,
absolutely. They are nicer places to be. They've got the modern screens. The service is still up to scratch.
The coffee is appalling.
Oh, though, I don't know.
To be fair.
But you are a coffee snob. And so are you.
Anyway, I am, yeah.
I mean, Carla, less so. Or maybe you are as well.
But I will try it.
You can't,
it's cost of living after all.
Can't deny the sausage, cheese and bean melt, can you?
The range might not be for everybody, but they've got some absolute winners, haven't they? The prices are still amazing. But, you know, for a cheap sausage roll, it's a bloody good sausage roll. And the environment in which you buy it, and even like the logo and stuff, which they've tweaked, what they're trying to do is marry up. I'll keep coming back to this. You know, you're not paying very much, but you are getting a good product and a good experience for that. And that's absolutely the right way to go. Another client that we work with is Card Factory. And while some of their older stores are you know, a bit faded and a bit tired, if you go to a newer Card Factory, it will feel fresh, contemporary, modern, light, airy, everything modern retail is supposed to be. And they'll have that range that Tom's so keen on. But their prices will be really, really low. You will get absolutely good enough quality for the price that you pay.
So it's about offering something. So yeah, there is that affordability element, but you're getting something else. So with Greggs, for example, it's, I guess, that consistency as well. And obviously, like, they've upped their game in terms of, like, the environment and the, I guess, the service as well, right? I mean, it seems like you can go in there and you know what you're going to get, and it's going to be quite a pleasant experience in that sense. But then, obviously, Card Factory, I've not been to any of the new stores, but I'm assuming, again, that they've tried to elevate the experience, again, offering something that is just beyond affordability.
Value is sort of underpinned by quality, but then quality is one of these words that, when we touch on it in a focus group, you're like, well, we can spend the whole group talking about what it is. And as you say, so many things create this sense of quality, whether the product, obviously, but the service and the ambience and the experience and the website and the app and everything kind of comes together. And then that all leads to your perception of, did I get good value for what I paid?
Yeah. To be fair, Card Factory don't get absolutely everything right. That, like, store look and feel can be slightly jarring given they lean so heavily into range. Like, there's so much product there that it doesn't feel especially well curated. And you do see people, when talking about quality, if they're a certain kind of shopper, they want to have it signposted. And to make that shopping experience really easy, which isn't necessarily something you get at a Card Factory store. But what they do absolutely nail is that low price point, good enough quality and choice. So they're ticking many of the boxes, and which is why they are doing pretty well as a business, given the times that we're going through.
And they're not sitting still. You know, they are aware of the need to keep up with what value means to people and how you really deliver that beyond just low prices. I mean, you can still get, what is it, 5 cards for a quid? I mean, you're going to struggle to pay less than that. But they are on top of things.
Just going back to Tom's point on longevity and people sort of seeing purchases as an investment, where else have you seen that?
Before jumping into Vinted, there's been brands that have for some time, like, made a real virtue of that. So did a great project for Jojo, Mama and Bebe last year. Great project, but their equity is very much built on that quality that lasts and that you can then sell on. And that's where Vinted comes in so brilliantly, because, you know, particularly with kids' clothes, they grow out of them so quickly. But with a site like Vinted, you can sell them on, make quite a lot of the money back that you spent on them. And everyone kind of wins from that equation. And I think historically, like, buying secondhand clothes, getting clothes from a charity shop, there's maybe a slight stigma attached to it, particularly among kind of like younger generations. Whereas now, actually, it's a badge of pride to be like, oh, I picked this up online, paid X for it, and it's awesome. So I think Vinted are really, like, changing the way that purchase is framed. I know eBay's been around for ages and sort of does it to the same degree, but there's so many different people selling on eBay. I think there's maybe question marks around the quality of what you might get or how authentic it will be. Whereas Vinted, I think, has kind of shifted the conversation on that a bit beyond. What do you think, Rich?
I agree. I think it's the acceptability of Vinted, I think, is incredible. And the badge of honour thing is incredible, because I think a few years ago, secondhand clothes, stigma is the right word. I don't think it would have been so lauded. But Vinted is going from strength to strength as far as I understand.
Vinted's interesting because it makes a lot of other brands think about how you can lean into that. Mm. Like, how, again, thinking about M&S and Jojo, that you should be building clothes to, making clothes to last and endure, and then have that resale value on these other sites. Yeah. So it's giving a lot of brands and their products a second life. Whereas I think historically the focus was just on that like first sale, that first transaction. Whereas now people are being encouraged to think more long term. Which obviously links into the sustainability side of the proceedings.
Yeah, it's an interesting tension with the rise of like Shein, however we say it.
Yeah.
Who are very much not about that. It's about, you know, the really like fast fashion, like buying things en masse, like huge hauls, and then wearing them once and then that's it. Kind of get past, yeah. I don't know, yeah, to landfill or yeah, just discarding in some way. So yeah, I think it's an interesting tension, definitely.
Well, from the consumer point of view, and let's face it, lots of consumers are not worried about sustainability. I know we hear a lot of noise, but they're not.
That's for another episode.
That's another episode, right? But those sorts of brands, it is, again, though, it's good enough quality for a fair price because it costs almost nothing. And then when you ditch it, well, you're like, oh, I did get good value from that, even though I wore it once or wore it twice or used it just the once. So it does still work.
Still part of that equation.
Yeah.
People are thinking about the whole life cycle. So if I'm paying a bit more, I want to be able to get something back when I sell it again or when I stopped using it. But if I'm only expecting to use it once, then that's fine.
It's kind of grubby though, isn't it? Makes me think of those people that go to Glastonbury and abandon their tents. It's not cool.
I think all this represents how complex this trend is, being called value complexity. I think there's a lot of different tensions and a lot of choice in the market as well, which is obviously making it quite challenging for some consumers to work out. And that's why we have the likes of Martin Lewis to help us guide us through it.
And we have to be careful as well, because as much as we talk about the squeeze, middle and cost of living crisis and people being savvy and everything we've just talked about, we're all still making bad decisions when it comes to value, because value is so subjective. So if we go for a couple of pints now in a city centre, that is such terrible value compared to you can buy exactly the same product in Asda or Morrison's and not spend anything. But, well, I definitely still do it. So I'm getting value from it in some way, aren't I? Or we'd probably all go out for a lunch on the weekend. You're not even that hungry. The food's not even that good. But you've spent, if you've got the kids with you, you're spending £100 potentially. Is that good value for one meal? It can't be, can it? I know you didn't cook it and you won't wash it up, but still. Or you'll buy those trainers. I'm not allowed to look, but I am looking at Tom and I'm looking at me, that you definitely didn't need, that cost way too much. Is that good value? It probably isn't. So as much as we talk about people being super savvy, we do it where we need to, and some people need to do it everywhere and some people don't. But it can be quite patchy.
It can be quite down to the individual where that value is and it means to you.
Thanks for all those examples. That was a really useful conversation to have about, I guess, where you're seeing this trend play out in, I guess, the real world in your lives. But what conversations have you been having with your clients, and have you got any consumer stories, Rich? I know you've talked quite a lot about focus groups already, so I'm interested in, what conversations are you having in this sort of research setting related to this trend around value complexity?
Well, as Tom said earlier, a lot of our briefs are either directly about value or indirectly about value in some way. And there was no way that Tom and I were going to sit here and not talk about loyalty and reward schemes, because we're seeing a lot of briefs about wanting to start one of those or understand how best to deliver one that's already up and running. And in fact, we did a webinar on that topic.
Did you?
We did. You may have heard about it. I'm sure you've listened. Yeah. There will be a link to it, I believe, at the end of this podcast, should you want to listen to it in full.
And a QR code to scan, not a QR canned code.
Potentially right now.
Right now. Right this second.
Could they really? God, we're so modern, aren't we?
Like the loyalty schemes, we've had so many briefs about them over the last few years. And what's interesting is that it's not kind of exclusive to the traditional loyalty scheme categories. It's not just the grocers. We're getting them for fast food. We're getting them for different retail experiences. We get them from telco brands. Like, everyone is exploring this space and looking for additional hooks to demonstrate value and make their customers stickier, which in and of itself creates a slight tension in that with loyalty schemes so ubiquitous, people are, one, super, super savvy about them and what a good one looks like. But two, they kind of increasingly question the value of them, and it becomes quite a difficult thing to stand out and demonstrate that you are doing something really beneficial to the consumer. I think the way in which loyalty schemes now feed in to how people assess value is really, really interesting, because people's cynicism is properly apparent, right? Like, and call back to that random TV show on loyalty schemes that's on like 9 o'clock on Channel 4. But that was all about a very specific aspect of loyalty schemes, that members' pricing. Like, clearly there's been a focus group somewhere where someone's been like, you know what's great? Mates rates. You guys should do mates rates. And people have been like, oh, that's a really good plan. We can manipulate that. Or at least that's how I feel consumers maybe look at it.
I had to stand in Superdrug last week and download the app and sign up because...
You wanted to get the
membership. Well, I had to.
Mm.
You know, I didn't... It wasn't I wanted to. I kind of needed.
It's. Yeah. I think Which came after a supermarket for this, didn't they, recently? I think
it was Tesco. Yeah. I think it was about... displaying the true price of things and whether the club card price or the reduced price is really...
And the unit cost, wasn't it, I think?
I am not traditionally a Sainsbury's shopper. Went in there recently and there was an item that was like Nectar pricing, but the normal price was like astronomical. It had clearly had such a markup to it. Didn't have a Nectar card, so I'm like, I guess I'm paying an absolute premium for this thing. And you can see why consumers are reacting to it so cynically. And it just further kind of feeds into this value complexity, that you've got a message that's being put out there that's about good value, and it actually feels like it's trying to rip you off.
And it feels like loyalty schemes now have become a bit of a hygiene factor as well, in that people expect to see them, but then, like you said, don't have... like, can't really navigate like what actually, where the true value is being held in that loyalty scheme as well. So I think that is quite an interesting point that people need to navigate.
There's so many loyalty schemes. A lot of them are multifaceted. Mm. How confident are you with the apps that you've got on your phone that any one of them's truly giving you a great reward for your custom, which from the consumer perspective is what they're all supposed to be about? But on member prices, the cynicism that is out there, are we saying we're going to see this member prices mechanic fall away? Because at the moment, it's just growing and growing and growing, isn't it? Like Superdrug, Co-op, Asda probably, Tesco, Boots. Sainsbury's, Boots, everywhere's doing member prices. So does it not just work?
Yeah. Do you think it's because people are less brand loyal? So to get people to sign up to these schemes, they need to give them something instant and something that, you know, you get right now, not necessarily you have to come back 5 times, but sign up and we'll give you a reward straight away.
I think there must be a lot of people, and I don't know whether they're right or wrong, they must look at those member prices and say, that's a genuine discount, and therefore that is genuine value. It is worth being a member. It's worth giving up my data. It's worth the faff of scanning something at the checkout to access that value. I don't know whether they are genuinely good prices across the board. I imagine some of them are in anyone's shopping trip, and some of them are just the price, really. But until we start to see them fall away, I think that'd be very interesting if one retailer says, you know what, we did member prices and we're not going to do it anymore. Mm. But has that happened? I haven't seen that yet, I don't think.
I suspect we might see certain retailers moving towards something more like a, as a customer, you get 10% discount on every purchase, which might seem super generous, but in some categories, it's a notion that's being tested. And I reckon that feels more sincere than having specific products that you hero and you jack up the price and then have a discount for members only. I suspect that that's going to be where things pivot.
Yeah, it's a good point about like loyalty being quite fickle as well, because I guess we've seen that with like bank switching, utility switching, and cost of living, people are quite happy to sort of ditch one supplier to go with another just to get like a kind of instant, like you get cash back, for example. And similar with like signing up for a credit card and getting like the reward and then swapping over the credit on that to another one like 12 months down the line. So do you think there's that happening in loyalty? Do you think there's like a competition, I guess, as well? I did hear in a focus group recently someone saying, I just don't have the space for all these loyalty apps anymore. Yeah. And like some of them had to be deleted for that reason.
Well, I think potentially consumers and brands see loyalty schemes kind of differently, come at it from different angles, because what consumers are really asking for is a reward for choosing you as a brand. For, you know, I could have gone to any supermarket, but I've come to yours and now I want a reward for that. Whereas I think often brands are saying, we really need you to kind of invest in us like longer term to get a reward, because then you're getting a reward for loyalty. So I've had people in groups go, well, I'm a loyal customer. How long have you been a customer? Oh, 6 months. You're like, well, that's not a loyal customer. You're new. You're just a customer. So I think from the consumer point of view, they don't have any problem switching and chopping and changing and going here and in there. They'll probably feel like they're quite... Loyalty is simply, if I shop with you here and now or once, then I'm loyal. I know that is not the definition of the word, but from their perspective, it makes sense.
If we had to sum up, what do you think are the takeaways that brands need to be thinking about for 2024 and beyond?
Just to kind of chime with the trend of value complexity, it's not as simple as low price, cheap and cheerful. There's actually minimum expectations around quality that come with it. People also want a range of things to choose from. So you can't, it's not one dimensional in any way. And then there are other kind of facets of the experience that help to justify or convey value, whether that's the store experience, as we've referenced with the likes of a Greggs or an Aldi, or whether it's a loyalty scheme which gives people something back for shopping with you. There's lots of different components that people are weighing up and using as a way of assessing whether they're getting value for money in that instance.
It's about being genuine. Great value will be great. You'll be paying a good price, a fair price, a low price for a quality or an experience, as Tom says, that is well worth that price. And it's the same with discounts or the reward that you might get from a loyalty scheme. You want that discount to be real and meaningful, and you want that reward to be relevant and meaningful, and you want to feel like that brand has actually spent a little bit of money on you.
Thank you for listening to today's podcast episode. If you haven't downloaded it already, you can access our cost of living trends report by scanning the QR code on screen.
And if you'd like to speak to either of us or any of our guests about the trends that we've covered in the podcast, then please get in touch by the email address.
And that's everything from us. Thank you for listening.